This podcast is a proud member of the That Moment In Podcast Network. Check out the network at thatmomentin.com.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to another episode of the Cinema Recall Podcast here at thatmomentin.com. This is the podcast where myself, the Vern, brings on a guest, and then we talk about a particular scene from a classic movie, all right? My guest today should need no introduction, but I'm going to give him an introduction anyways. He is the host of The Lair of the Unwanted, which you can find at lairoftheunwanted.com. He also has a YouTube channel called CineGamer. It is my esteemed pleasure to welcome to the studio Mr. Jason Soto. Hello, sir.
What is up, everybody?
Yes. Now, I have been a big fan of The Lair of the Unwanted. I think you and Nolan just do an incredible job introducing me to some really great B movies that I should either see or not see. Most of the times, it's movies that I probably should not see at all, but hearing you talk about these movies is way more fun than actually probably watching them themselves here. But yeah, tell our listeners out there a little bit about The Lair of the Unwanted, and then we'll talk about the CineGamer next.
Sure. Yeah, so it's a podcast I do with my friend Nolan. We are both lovers of B-movies, bad movies, cult movies, etc., etc. And we've been doing this going on 8 years now, which is pretty damn crazy when you think about it. And yeah, just twice a month we talk about a movie. Just we sort of go through the whole movie, kind of give you what happens through the whole thing. So that way if, you know, maybe you don't want to watch The Killing of Satan, we'll tell you, you know, what happens in that movie. Or maybe you want to watch The Killing of Satan and then you just want to hear, you know, two other dudes' opinions about it. We provide that. We do top five lists sometimes. We have guests on every month. Vern has been on many, 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 many times.
Mm-hmm.
He also helps us out with, you know, background stuff and stuff like that. So, again, I thank you very much for your help and your, to listening to us, Vern. Means a lot to us.
Keep doing what you're doing, man. If you keep making those episodes, man, I'll keep listening to them. So, yeah. And I love your Game of the Unwanted that you have at the end.
Yes.
Those are a lot of fun.
Yeah, we do every episode with a guest. We have a game that the guest plays in. Nolan hosts one game. I host the second game. And people seem to like them. And this leads us to have a tournament every January, which gets crazy. But it's a lot of fun.
I'm gonna win that one of these years, Jason. All right, I'm gonna fucking take that brass ring, man. Do it.
I wish you luck.
I appreciate that, buddy. And then tell our listeners a little bit about CineGamer, which is on YouTube.
Right. All right. So, about a couple years ago, I started kind of getting back into board games. Which is interesting timing because board games has kind of been through this whole rebirth. And so as I was playing these board games, I kept noticing that they would remind me of certain movies. And so every board game I played, I kept pairing it up with a movie. So I started a YouTube channel called CineGamer, where I took a movie, I paired it up with a board game that's, you know, very similar, whether it's in theme or name or something about it just reminded me of each other. And then I showed you how to play the game, and then I would review the movie. That sort of launched into me just now covering board games based on movies, which I think has been equally fun for me. So I've covered stuff like Back to the Future card game. I did a Wayne's World VHS game from the 90s, which is fucking terrible.
I remember that.
Coming up, I'm going to be doing Ghostbusters.
What, a VCR game? Or
No, just a board game that came out last year.
Oh, nice, okay.
Based on the 1984 movie. So I'm looking forward to doing that. That's going to be a lot of fun, I think. But yeah, it's just something I've, you know, kind of just been doing because I used to write movie reviews with Nolan and our friend Nick Job. We used to do a website, but we quit that, and I had a little free time on my hands, so I was like, eh, fuck it, I'll just do this YouTube thing until I get bored with that, and then I'll move on to something else.
Yeah, I love it. I love it. You did, like, the Jumanji, and yeah. I watched the one about the labyrinth right there. I really kind of enjoyed. I think one of the first episodes you did that I really enjoyed was watching the one about Machine Girl and Sushi Girl. Just two completely different elements right there.
Yes, and that was the first episode, so that was like a bam introduction right in your face.
That's right. Well, I thank you very much for being on this episode with us. And yes, I totally forgot to introduce what this episode is. But you should see right on your podcast feed what we're going to be talking about. And that's right, we're going to be talking about Darren Aronofsky's Requiem for a Dream. You see, with the release of Mother that came out a few weeks ago, I posted a poll over at thatmomentin.com asking listeners to choose their favorite Darren Aronofsky films. And the choices were Pi, Black Swan, The Wrestler, The Fountain, and Requiem for a Dream, and the winner with the majority of votes was Requiem for a Dream. At a hard time finding guests, but I'm really happy that we brought on you, Mr. Soto, to talk about this movie. So before we get into our moments, just really briefly, tell listeners out there your kind of like history with Darren Aronofsky.
Huh. All right, well, the first movie I actually watched from his was Requiem for a Dream. As you can tell, is a very interesting movie to start off with. But then after that, I think the only other one I've seen was, Black Swan.
Okay.
I've only ever seen the two. I haven't seen Mother yet. I really do want to see Mother. It sounds very divisive, which I kind of like watching divisive movies because I'm kind of curious, like, why people feel one way or another about it.
Yeah.
But I haven't seen much of, you know, anything else he's done. I'm a little curious about it. But yeah, the first movie I ever watched was Requiem for a Dream, and I think I went on antidepressants immediately after that. So
well, the first time I watched that movie, I watched it with my dad. You see, the first movie I actually saw of his was Pi.
Ah.
Because I do remember seeing clips and trailers of it when I watched like movies and saw this kind of cool black and white feature. Mm-hmm. And I thought, oh, hey, this looks kind of cool. It's got a cool little techno soundtrack. So I picked it up and watched it. I'm like, this is pretty cool, but I have no idea what the fuck is going on. But I still like it. I have no idea what's really happening. I know there's a guy who's being chased by some religious sect and by Wall Street people. And I'm like, I don't understand. All he knows is a goddamn number. I mean, is it really that big of a deal that he knows this number? And then I saw ads for Requiem for a Dream, and it just looked insane. And at the time, my dad was working for a video distribution company back in the day when they still, you know, sold VHS tapes to different stores.
Oh, wow.
So we got in a promo copy of Requiem for a Dream, and I was visiting my dad. I'm like, Dad, you got the copy of Requiem for a Dream? Oh, we should totally watch this. And he's like, oh, all right, why not? And what's it about? And I'm like, I think it's about people trying to kill their drug habit. And we popped it on, and my dad's like, well, this is kind of cool with all the different split screen techniques there and the kind of edge right there. And he says, well, okay, I can kind of see why you like this movie. And then as we kind of, you know, talk and joke around here with it, and then it got to be towards the middle and then towards the end, and we were just more like just dead silence. And then after the movie was over, none of us just said a word. My dad just hit stop on the tape machine. And he goes, all right, son, I'm going to go home. I'm going to go to bed now. Have a good night. Are you okay getting home? And I'm like, uh-huh, sure. We really didn't say much than that. And then we went home, and yeah, I went home. And but yeah, that was my experience watching Requiem for a Dream with my dad.
That's
sounds... I gotta say, there's nothing better than watching ass to ass with your dad.
Yeah, I can only imagine.
But yeah, I just watched it with my dad. There was kind of really tripping weird. All right, well, let's do this right now. Let's go ahead and take a small little break right now. We'll play some quick ads from some other podcast shows that you should check out, and we will return.
We'll return after these messages.
Here's a few reasons why you should be listening to the Unwritable Rant podcast with host Juliet Miranda. She can tell a great story.
If you can't play dead, play drunk. And it works, I swear.
She interviews celebrities that have great stories.
If we have a cousin that's kind of strange, we don't put him away or tuck him away. We set him on an old dryer out in the front yard with alcohol and let him wave at people.
right. And then you tell your friends about it.
And she's tolerant and loves kids.
So these kids go running up after the ball, and I stand up and I yell, "Kids die in the street all the time!"
So head on over to theunwritablerant.com and listen to the show.
This podcast is a proud member of the LAM Podcasting Network. Find the network at largeassmovieblogs.com.
Listen to The Lair of the Unwanted on iTunes, and you can hear me, Jason Soto, use the F word.
French?
No.
Fudge?
Sorta, but no.
Frank?
No.
Fridge?
No.
Faruka Balk?
What? No.
Farfid Nugan?
Jeez, no.
Alright, what F word could you possibly be talking about?
I'm talking about
In the Lair of the Unwanted, covering the movies you don't want to see and more on iTunes.
The most controversial film of the year is also the one critics are calling the best film of the year.
I love you, Harry.
Requiem for a Dream is furiously brilliant.
Naturally.
A thrilling, stylish, and hypnotic film.
I like thinking about the red dress and the television. Now when I get the sun, I smile.
From Darren Aronofsky, the director of Pi, Requiem for a Dream.
All right. Welcome back to the Cinema Recall Podcast. You just heard a quick trailer of Requiem for a Dream. This came out in 2000, like I said before, written and directed by Darren Aronofsky. This one stars Ellen Burstyn, Jared Leto, Jennifer Connelly, and Marlon Wayans. And it's essentially the story of four people living in, New York, yeah. Coney Island,
yep.
Right there. And it's about their descent into addiction. Basically, their descent into hell, because we got Marianne, who's Jennifer Connelly, Tyrone, who is Marlon Wayans, and Harry, which is Jared Leto. And those three are hooked on heroin very bad, but they each have their own dreams. They think they're going to conquer this disease. Marianne wants to be a fashion designer. I'm not quite sure what Harry and Tyrone want to do with their lives.
I think they wanted to just be like drug kingpins.
Yes, that's right. They wanted to get a pound of pure heroin so they can off it and sell it and be on Easy Street and all that stuff with there. Okay. And then we got Harry's mom, Sarah Goldfarb, who gets a call to be on TV. And she becomes so excited that she gets to be on TV again. She wants to lose weight so she can fit into her red dress. And so she becomes hooked on these diet pills. Mm-hmm. And we get her descent as well. I have to say, and you may disagree or agree with me on this one, I think Sarah Goldfarb is probably the most tragic story of the whole thing. Just the way she gets kind of into the whole addiction in the first place.
Yeah, I can agree with that. Because she was a normal person. At the start of the movie, she was just a mother, you know, who had opportunity to be on her favorite TV show. And she had some, you know, body issues. She felt she was too fat to be on TV. So she, you know, decided to take the easy way out and go on these diet pills. And despite everybody telling her, "Hey, maybe you shouldn't take these things," she's like, "Nah, I'm going to do it. Because I want to be on this show." And then And then the movie happens.
Yeah, so, well, the beginning of the movie, too, I mean, I wouldn't say she was really all there. She has no problem with her son stealing her TV Target to buy money for drugs. I mean, she must have known that.
Well, I think it was more like she just loved him unconditionally. And, you know, yeah, he had his faults, but he's doing what he must do, I think, in her eyes. So, okay. In a way, she's just trying to be a good mother.
I can see that. Okay, like, she doesn't mind the kind of problems he's having. She's thinking, all right, well, in the beginning of the movie, too, she says, it'll be okay. Everything mm-hmm. will work out in the end. Everything will be just fine. And so she's kind of deluding in her own dreams as well.
Yeah.
But the moments that I'm going to talk about first, and then we'll have Jason talk about his moment, since his moment is towards the end of this, mm-hmm. Is the moment when Harry actually goes back to visit his mother. At this point in the movie, basically Harry and Tyrone are doing pretty well with their drug business, and they're building up more and more equity and cash, and he wants to do something nice for his mother because he's been stealing her TV back and forth for so many years. He decides to go back to her place to tell her that he bought her a new television station. And when he sees his mom is like all super happy and just jumping up and down, because at this moment she is probably a good month or so into taking the diet pills, mm-hmm. Which is basically a series of uppers. So she's just feeling all super hyper. Like, do you want some cake? I can make some cake. Want some food? Huh? I can make some food for you. What you need? He's like, Mom, settle down. You're freaking me out, all right? And they're at the table, and he hears something in the background. And as the audience, we hear it too, but we're not quite sure what it is.
Hey, Ma. You on uppers?
What?
You're on uppers. You're on diet pills, ain't you?
I told you, I'm going to a specialist.
That's what I thought. You make it a croaker for speed, ain't you?
Harry, are you all right? I'm going to a doctor.
What does he give you, Ma? Does he give you pills?
Of course he gives me pills. He's a doctor.
What kind of pills?
A purple one, a blue one, an orange one.
Like what's in them?
Harry, I'm Sarah Goldfarb, not Albert Einstein. How should I know what's in him?
Does the stuff make you feel good, sorta, and give you lots of pep?
Well, yeah, a little.
A little? Ma, I can hear you grinding your teeth from here.
Yeah, that goes away at night.
At night?
Yeah, when I take the green one. 30 minutes, I'm asleep. Poof, just like that.
Ma, you gotta cut that stuff loose. I'm telling you, it's no good.
It's no good. 25 pounds I've lost.
Big deal. So what? You want to be a dope fiend, for Christ's sake?
What is with the dope fiend? Am I foaming at the mouth or something? He's the nice doctor.
I am telling you, that croak is no good.
How come you know so much, huh? How come you know more about medicine than a doctor?
Believe me, Ma, I know. All right? You get strung out, for Christ's sake.
Oh, come on. I almost fit in my red dress. The one I wore to your high school graduation? The one your father liked so much. Oh, I remember how he looked at me in that red dress.
Mama, what's the big deal about the red dress?
I'm gonna wear it. You don't know. I'm gonna be on television. I got a call and an application and...
Come on, Ma. Who's pulling your leg?
No. I'm telling you, I'm going to be a contestant on television. I don't know when yet. They haven't told me when yet. But you'll see how proud you are when you see your mother in a red dress, television, and golden shoes.
What is the big deal about being on television? Those pills you're taking will kill you before you ever get on, for Christ's sake.
Big deal? You drove up in a cab. Did you see who had the best seat? I'm somebody now, Harry. Everybody likes me. Soon, millions of people will see me and they'll all like me.
The way he actually focuses in on her teeth and just sees the teeth grinding, and for suddenly, right there, which was like kind of a happy, kind of light scene, kind of switches and becomes dark when he finds out that his mom is taking these diet pills.
Yep.
And he basically confronts her on it, saying that, Mom, you're making a quarter of a speed, ain't you? And she's like, no, I got these from a doctor, right? He's a good person. And he asked her about what type of medicine it is. And she's like, well, I don't know what's in it, you know? And she tells him about the different type of pills she takes. And then she goes into this really heartbreaking confession, which she talks about her wanting to be on the TV show and how she doesn't have anyone in her life anymore. Yeah. I'm sorry. I mean, this is kind of a very heartbreaking scene because she's basically just been to him that she's this woman that's alone, you know, like, she says, you know, your father's gone, you're gone. What do I have? I've got nobody. And he says, well, you got friends. And she goes, they don't need me. Oh, I've got nothing left here. And she says, I like thinking about me in the red dress. You know, when I wake up in the morning, I feel happy. And in some ways, you know, Harry's kind of like disturbed by this. And yet he can't really blame her because of the addition that she does. But yet it's bringing her into his type of world that really just kind of disturbs him. And then he got the moment, too, where he's just sitting there in the car crying. And then shoots up and everything's fine. You know, he just kind of like blots that out. So both of them are just kind of blotting out the real problems there. But I just wanted to talk briefly about that moment. That is kind of like the moment in the movie when things take a turn towards the dark side.
True. That actually is probably true, yeah.
Any thoughts about this moment there? I mean,
if I'm being like 100% honest, before I came on the show, you said that I didn't have to rewatch the movie.
No, it's true. I said just, but you do remember this moment.
I said I do remember the movie. Trust me, I will never forget this movie as long as I live.
Hey.
But this is one of those movies where I sort of vowed that I would never watch again, just because, mainly just because of my moment. But I do remember your moment. Yes, I do absolutely remember what you're talking about. I do agree with you. I do think that was sort of the turning point, because the first half of the movie is sort of like, you know, their introduction to everything. Like, you know, Sarah goes on the drugs, the other three get on the heroin, the Harry and Marlon Wayne's character, they start their little drug empire. Soon they're kind of notorious drug dealers. They're kind of, you know, famous. Well, I don't know, famous. I don't know if famous is the right word, but
they're building up their money well. They're actually doing a good job trying to build. They have that suitcase.
Yeah.
Not suitcase. Sorry, the shoebox that keeps filling up with money and everything.
Yep.
And I think Harry and Marion are able to afford an apartment now with the money that they're making. So they're moving on up to some east side with heroin money on the side. moving on up.
You gotta love that. I think the only reason you have so many podcasts is so you can just sing and no one can stop you because it's your show. But then you're right. Then that part happens, the part you're talking about, and then it just goes to total shit. And then you're just sad for the next hour and a half after that. Because this is a long movie, so it's about 2 hours. And an hour and a half of it, you're just sad.
Well, you got to understand this, too. Right after that sequence with Harry and his mom, we cut to a sequence with, I think it is, Marlon Wayne's character inside a limo.
Uh-huh.
And he's talking to, like, a deaf guy.
Uh-huh.
And the deaf guy is telling him that, you know, he's doing a really good job with the business and he wants to give them more responsibility, where it turns out it was a sting operation.
Yep.
And he gets shot and he gets chased around there.
Yep.
And then the tower car comes down there. There's this fall.
Yep.
I'm like, okay, now we're going to start going to the downfall here. All right. It's not just the season, because this movie is split up by seasons. It starts off in summer and then fall, and then it ends in winter.
Yep.
All right. And I just think winter is a good segue to kind of talk about your sequence. So I'll let you go ahead, Jason. You can kind of go ahead and introduce this part.
Okay. So my sequence is basically the entire ending of the movie. This is what sticks out to me the most when I think of this movie, because this is probably the second most depressing thing I've ever seen on film, next to the ending of Dancer in the Dark, which is, we're not talking about that right now. I won't get into that. But if you've seen Dancer in the Dark, you know what I'm talking about. But
well, Jason,
yes,
let me. Is it okay if I try to I just bring people up to date with the sequence, because you're talking about the very last
it's like the last sequence. Okay, well, basically, all right. So has Vern explained? When it hits fall, it literally and metaphorically is fall, in that things start going bad for Marlon Wayans' character and Jared Leto's character. And soon the money they were saving up starting to dwindle. They're no longer, you know, they can no longer sell their drugs. Things are just going bad all around. Sarah's character, she's gone completely off the deep end. And the scene I almost chose actually was the refrigerator scene.
Oh, yes.
I almost chose that, but I want to talk about the ending. So, but I need to kind of get through a lot of this before I get to my actual part, which is basically we witness them kind of their downfall, like you said. Mm-hmm. And so Sarah's taking more and more of these pills. Everyone's just kind of like low on money. They're sort of kind of grasping for straws. And then eventually the shit hits the fan. Just everything bad that could possibly go wrong for these characters goes wrong.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
Honey, help us.
I need a doctor, man.
My friend is sick. Need some help, please.
I can't take it, help man. Us. My arm. My fucking arm.
Just hang the fucking
No,
oh,
man!
Help us! The body's fucking help us, please!
Maid Marian, welcome.
Can you hear me? Can you see me?
Yes, sir.
Okay, for work. Can you hear me? Can you see me?
Yes, sir.
Okay, for work. Can you hear me? Can you see me?
Yes, sir.
Okay, for work. Can you hear me? Can you see me?
Yes, sir.
Okay, for work. Can you hear me? Can you see me?
Yes, sir.
Okay, for work.
Fellas, meet Mary.
Sir, goddamn New York dopey niggers, learn some manners.
Can you hear me? Can you see me?
Yes, sir.
Okay for work.
Mouthpiece.
Can you hear me? Can you see me?
Says he's got something wrong with his arm.
I don't think he'll be putting any more dope in that arm.
Smells worse than he do.
Test.
Better get him over to the hospital. I don't expect to live out the week.
Ready, man. One.
And this is sort of the start of my moment here, where both Jared Leto's character and Marlon Wayans' character, they get busted by the cops, mm-hmm. by the feds. And Jared Leto, he's been taking so much heroin that his arm gets infected. And to the point where when he's in line at prison and the prison guard keeps asking him, like, are you able to work or whatever his are asking, he can't even stand up. And he's just really in pain, and his arm is just very, 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 very much in bad shape. And here's a little tidbit about me to anyone who might not know. I am, like, deathly afraid of needles. And,
oh, no.
right, yeah. So here now you're like, oh, that's why you picked this. Okay.
I totally understand why, too, especially the needle going into the arm. Okay,
yes,
makes sense.
Yeah, this was not a favorite. This isn't why I don't want to watch this movie ever again. So his arm is completely fucked up to the point where it gets amputated. And he's in the hospital with an amputated arm, and he's in prison on top of that. Marlon Wayans is just in regular prison, and he's in, like, what's that called? Like a work camp type prison where they force you to, like, break rocks or something?
Yeah, but he's making mashed potatoes, I think. Like, a kitchen. He's, like, stirring this some sort of pot. Either it's, like, glue or something.
Oh. Okay, I thought he... Okay, like I said, it's been a little while since I've seen the movie. I thought he was, like, outside doing something. Well, anyway, he's working something. They basically force him to work. Mm-hmm. And again, this just kind of makes it depressing because it was, like, the beginning of the movie. He had hopes and dreams, and he had, oh, we're going to be, you know, mega, you know, millionaires, and we're going to be the biggest drug dealers in town, and now we're in prison making mashed potatoes for everybody. And the other dude's in hospital with no arm. Probably next depressing thing is Jennifer Connelly's character, where through the whole movie she gets hounded by Keith David, which amazing by the way that he's in this movie. He gets hounded by her. And saying, if you ever are in a tough spot, come see me, and I'll get you taken care of with money. So it turns out this involves going to a party he's throwing. And, Vern, how graphic can I get?
You just grab as you want to be. Okay. Let me say this, though, that Keith David plays a character known as, like, Big Tim, who's basically holding all the heroin in this town, and the only way he gives it up is for pussy. All right?
Yeah, that's what it was, That, you're right, that's what it was. Yeah, that's right. The only way you can get heroin from him is if you let him fuck you, basically. But then he tells Jennifer Connelly, you know, to come to this party. There's another girl there, and then they proceed to go ass-to-ass with a dildo. In a very notorious scene because, as I'm describing everything that I'm happening, we're seeing these, like, in glimpses. So, like, it'll go from Jared Leto to Marlon Wayans to Jennifer Connelly to Ellen Burstyn, and they'll just kind of intermingle. So it's just been, like, montage of depression for the last 20 minutes. And so, during, like, you know, everything that's happening, you just hear the chant, ass to ass, ass to ass, ass to ass, ass to ass. And it's just like, God, just where's the gun to blow my brains out? This is so fucking depressing. And then Sarah's character, she's so strung out on the diet pills that she, after the thing with the refrigerator where she has, like, this freak out moment where she thinks the refrigerator comes alive and starts attacking her, she runs out of the apartment, like, in her, like, nightgown and starts running around the streets of New York City, like, screaming like a mad woman. And she's, like, on the subway just, like, talking all crazy and saying crazy shit until, like, the cops get involved. And she's so out of it that they have no choice but to send her to, like, a psychiatric hospital. And the only way that she'll snap out of it is if she gets a electrical shock treatment. Intermingled with the ass-to-ass, with Jared Leto's arm being cut off, to Marlon Wayans making the mashed potatoes or digging or whatever he was doing, we get Ellen Burstyn's character getting electrical shock treatment. And this is all, like, in a montage, like, type, segment. Yeah. Like, it's just happening, like, in flashes. And seriously, I was like, fucking hell, man. God damn. Can this be any more sad? Jesus.
No, because you can hear the audio of one person's stories with another. So
yes.
you're hearing what's going on in Jennifer Connelly's thing.
Yes.
While Wayans is, like, punching potatoes here. Because you can hear him pile away potatoes, but the background, you hear the chat going, come, 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 come.
Yep.
Yeah. And then we hear, like, Sarah Goldfarb being, I guess, electrocuted while something's happening with the Jared Leto character.
Yeah,
so the way that
his arm's getting
the
cut
sound
off.
Design of this film is just all over the place, too. Uh-huh. And yes, it is literally a hell ride right there. All right. This is the complete moment here where my mouth just dropped to the floor the first time I watched the movie. And I watched the unedited version with my dad. So, yeah, the whole ass scene.
Oh,
yeah.
I did too. I watched the unedited version of this too. Because, you know, whenever you get a DVD, they're like, you can watch the edited or the unedited. And I'm like, well, fuck it. I'm watching the unedited version. Why the fuck not?
Yeah.
And, yeah, you see – apparently I looked it up. That is a difference in the edited version is you don't see much of the ass-to-ass. In the unedited, you see it happening, and then that just kind of makes it sadder somehow.
Yeah.
I have gone on record to say, and this is going to probably cause controversy, but I'm going to say it anyway. Out of the four people in this ending, I've always said that Jennifer Connelly had it the least bad because...
Whoa.
Because, see, everyone has the same reaction. Whoa. Think about this for a second. Ellen Burstyn is getting electrocuted in the hospital. Jared Leto got his fucking arm amputated, and he's in prison. Marlon Wayans is in prison making mashed potatoes. Jennifer Connelly, yes, she's addicted to heroin. Yes, she has to do humiliating sexual acts to kind of get anything. But she has her freedom, like, in terms of, you know, like, she has hope. Like, you know, she could, the next day after the ass-to-ass scene, could go get help and then be free of the addiction. Everyone else is stuck where they're at. You know what I mean? That's what I'm trying to say. Is, you know, she could get free of the whole thing and continue living her life. Whereas Ellen Burstyn is she's completely gone. Like, there's no hope for her now. She's just completely crazy in a mental hospital. Jared Leto and Marlon Wayans are going to be in prison till however long, and Jared Leto has no left arm.
That's
so,
your point there.
Out of all of them, she has the better ending, just because she could get herself clean. She could realize what she's doing and be like, I need to change my life. And go live, get a new life. So whole point.
She should go back to the labyrinth.
Cleaned up. Yeah, she should go find David Bowie. Go apologize to Toby and go back to the labyrinth. Yes, absolutely.
Well, no, because at the labyrinth, there she says, "Whenever you need us," or the puppets say, "Whenever you need us, you know, we'll be there for you." So I'm thinking right about now.
There you go.
She kind of needs you right there. All right.
Yep.
Oh,
there you go.
Yeah. Now, I know you've only watched this movie once, but I have seen this movie many times.
Jesus Christ. How do you do that?
There was a part of my life I watched this movie right before I went to bed.
What?
I had to watch the movie before I went to bed. I had roommates, and I always had this movie being played, like, right before I went to bed.
God damn. I can't even imagine. Jeez.
It was totally heartbreaking, but I like these characters and I like their downfall. I don't know why. I'm a sick guy, but yeah, I really just enjoyed watching the frenetic pace of this movie, and yeah.
I can see maybe the first half and then stop it when fall hits.
Okay.
But then, like, just trying to get past that ending, like, man.
It's a tough one, and I really don't blame anyone that says, look, I've seen the movie once, that's all I need to see, because there are movies like that, movies I've watched once, and I probably don't want to see again. I think Martyrs comes to mind.
Oh, God, yes. Me too.
Martyrs, I think, is a really brilliant film, but I don't think I could watch it again.
Me neither.
Same thing with Irreversible. I could not. I had a hard time getting through that movie the first time.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, that's... I think Irreversible is one where I think you'd be weird if you said you wanted to watch it again. I mean, everything else before and after the part we're talking about, yes, beautifully shot. Everything was great. then that one part that I know you're talking about, that I'm sure you know what I'm talking about, happens.
The one that Harvey Weinstein watched on repeat?
Yeah, I'm sure. But, you know, you probably could watch a reverse poll and just fast forward through that part.
That's true.
Because everything before and after, it's just stunningly beautiful and brilliant. It's just that part is just really uncomfortable because it's 20 minutes.
Yeah, it's like nonstop. It's always like one take and everything there too. And I listen to like interviews with the actors about there too, about how they block the scene and everything like that. Like, that doesn't make it any better. All right. I know you're actors and everything like that, and this is like, you know, a job, and that's what you're paid to do. But no, it still doesn't make it any better at all. Red Room for a Dream is probably for me a really good anti-drug movie. Like, if I ever catch any of my nephews or nieces doing like hardcore drugs, like cocaine, or see like a heroin needle, I'm gonna put in Red Room for a Dream.
Yes,
I'm gonna watch it.
And then I agree that
Uncle Jason, that was just basically my syringe for insulin. So I showed this whole anti-drug movie saying drugs are wrong. They're like, this is for my insulin. I'm like, oh, sorry. All right. Well, don't do group sets. All right. Just don't go to set orgies. All right. That's what I'm doing right here. I'm keeping you off the dildos. All right.
Yes. Say no to dildos.
That's right.
No, only you should be able to share dildos by yourself in your house alone, privately.
Yeah. So, not in a public situation there. All right. Yes. Well, any other like kind of quick little final thoughts about this movie? I will say this, though. I do still think that Ellen Burstyn was robbed of the Oscar.
Oh, absolutely. 100%. She was amazing. Everybody was amazing in this movie. And this was like 2000. So this was like right when Marlon Wayans was still doing nothing but comedies. So for him to do a dramatic role like this was like astounding. And he was like phenomenal in this film.
He was amazing. I wish he would have done more dramatic roles after this.
Yeah, he really hasn't, has he? He's just basically just done this, and then he went back to Scary Movie 2.
Yeah, just when I just can't blame him, though. Being a movie title like this would kind of fuck you up enough to go, all right, that's it. No, I don't want to put myself through this thing again. I'm
fair
just
enough,
take,
yeah. That's, yeah,
just that, a comedy, so.
Yeah, that could be.
All right. Like I said before, it's a brilliantly filmed movie. Everyone I talked to about this movie, they're like, yes, it's a wonderful movie. It's well acted. It's well made. Mm-hmm. I got really into it, but I'm never watching it again. All right.
Yes.
And that seems to be the case with a lot of, well, maybe not a lot of Aronofsky films, but I can maybe say the same. No, maybe not Mother. Mother doesn't get as depressing. I think this has to be probably his darkest and depressing movie in the Aronofsky filmography. The Wrestler does get kind of sad.
Oh.
But it's not like damaging as tragic.
Yeah,
as
that was how I felt about Black Swan. Like that was kind of just a fucked up movie, but I could watch it again easily.
Exactly. And maybe for me, the reason why just people don't want to watch Requiem for a Dream again is that maybe it hits too home. Like the whole thing with the mother becoming addicted just broke my heart because it reminded me of like my mom, and
I think it was like the most realistic, depiction of like drug abuse.
Yeah,
like they didn't glamorize it, they didn't make it so fantastical. Like this is like this could actually for real happen.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I like the way too that each character is subjective. Like when they're looking at the drug, that's all they're seeing. They're just seeing the what was that famous montage shot with the syringe?
Oh yeah,
and,
oh,
you know, and the eyes open and wide right there. Because that's all they are focused on. Same thing too with Sarah Goldfarb. You see the repeated montage of her taking pills and mixed in with the other three characters taking their drugs. I really don't have any else to really say about this movie though. But if you had to give it a rating out of five, what would you give it?
I would give it a 4. It's, like everything you said, it's done really well. It's written and directed and edited and acted very, very well. It's just depressing as all fuck. Which doesn't make it a bad movie by any means. It's just one you just can't, it's just one you probably shouldn't have to watch again. Like I think everybody should just be like once and done, and that's it. So Vern, I think you're a little weird for saying you've seen this more than
I am very much weird, yes.
But with that said, yeah, I'll give it 4 stars.
4 stars here, all right. I'm probably gonna give it like a 4.5 stars. I know it's kind of surprised I'm not giving it a 5 star. You know what? Fuck it, I am giving it a 5 star. Why? Because it is one of my favorite movies of all time, all right?
Wow.
I have like of my top 5 movies, Requiem for a Dream is number 2.
Okay, that's cool.
It was like if there's a list, I had a list of movies I could watch over and over again. I think I have like Pulp Fiction at number 1, and like this is number 2.
Okay, fair enough.
Which is very very odd, I know, but I just really just love watching the different techniques of sound design and how he framed the movie to add that in with the really great performances. Yes, it is a complete ride to hell, and I'm insane for saying this, though, but I kind of enjoy watching that ride to hell because it makes me feel better about my life.
Fair enough.
Whenever I think anything's going wrong, or if I get fired from a job, or you know, I don't have enough money for rent or food, I just put this movie on, and I go, hey, you know what? Things are not as bad. Things are actually going to be alright. I'm not involved in any type of like sex orgy. I'm not having to sell my body for drugs or food, alright? My arm's not going to get cut off, alright? They're not going to put me through electroshock therapy. It's okay. Alright? Yeah, I think everything's going to be cool.
Yep.
All right.
I agree.
Alright, well, that's going to wrap up this episode of the Cinema Recall Podcast. I want to give a big thanks to you, Mr. Jason Soto, for being on the show.
Thank you very much for having me. This was a lot of fun.
Well, tell me, man. Tell me what's going on at the Lair of the Unwanted and the Cine Gamer, and please tell the listeners where they can find you.
Sure. You can check out the Lair of the Unwanted over at thelairoftheunwanted.com. Every episode that we have done can be found there, including our last episode, which was a live episode we streamed live on YouTube. And you can check out our review of Yoga Hosers, the latest Kevin Smith film, there. All that's at thelairoftheunwanted.com. And then Cinegamer, which you can find at cinegamerjason.com. You can find all the episodes there. The next one, I haven't filmed it yet, but I'm sort of working on it. It's going to be my review of Ghostbusters the Board Game. So that'll be coming out pretty soon.
Well, pretty goddamn cool, man. All right. Yeah, and I remember that Yoga Hosers episode. I remember seeing that live, and it was actually kind of cool to see you and Noah's face. And
yeah, you were there. You and Steve Honeywell were nice enough to come out and watch the show live, and we greatly appreciate it.
Damn right, man. For the next episode of the Cinema Recall Podcast, I'm not really quite sure what we're going to do because we're still trying to figure out scheduling with guests, but we were going to do the 5 most disturbing scenes in horror with Zobo with a shotgun, Zoe Rose Smith.
Okay.
And then I do know for our Terror Tuesdays, I know that by the time this one airs, there should already be a review of Texas Chainsaw Massacre Part 2 on there. So you can listen to those. Yeah, but as always, you can check out all of our past episodes by going to the site thatmomentin.com and just press the little podcast button right there. You can get our shows. And also by the time this one airs too, there should be some coverage of the 2017 Twin Cities Film Festival. I am hoping to talk to Leah Thompson to at least have her sign my copy of Power of the Duck.
Nice.
So I'm hoping to have that happen there. So look for those episodes. I know they'll be coming here eventually on the show there. So like I said before, go on to thatmomentin.com. You can also listen to us. We are on like Stitcher, Podomatic, iTunes, most other places you can find podcast shows. But again, this is the Vern just saying good night to you all. Say good night to folks, Jason.
Good night.
All right. Good night, everybody. We'll see you soon.